the Norse Valkyrie. Vikings used to wear them for protection. The Valkyries fly over the battlefield, picking out the righteous dead. They reward the people who draw first blood. A soldier's angel. Norse mythology. The only way you get to go to heaven is to die in violence. You die in your sleep, you go to hell.
Well, that's pretty interesting, huh? Yeah, the Rite of the Valkyrie. Great Wagner music, right? Now I, as I scavenge around as I do all day and half the night, I picked up a broadcast from a area gun show that's got a lot of good meat on it, and I thought I'd run it for you. And obviously they're not at least openly political. I don't know them personally or anything, but I'm going to put this on here and see what you think.
Oh, that's nice. I like the box plate there. I was thinking that. But they do a billboard. Box and week keeps the bad guy away or something like that. Storm. You ready to take some calls? The lines are lit. Oops, we just lost one there. Let's go to Jim on line two. Good morning, Jim. Welcome to the Big Gun Show.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Well, I'm wondering, I don't reload or anything, but I heard Obama signed an executive order that all military brass is going to have to be destroyed. And I'm wondering how that's going to affect the flow of ammunition.
He did do that, and then there was a huge flood of calls and emails to state and federal representatives, House, Congress, all of the above, Senate. And that got rescinded, and the military is no longer destroying all of their spent brass.
Good, because that just seems like a waste, especially in such that, you know, it's a green thing to recycle, so.
That's exactly right.
Well, and not only that, it was just an assault on you know, they're not going to take away the guns, so they're going to take away the ammo. I mean, that's basically what it is, but they say, well, it's green, and, you know, the thing is, they're getting $2 a pound for reload, they're getting 35 cents a pound for scrapping it, so, you know.
So, yeah, that,
another executive decision will manage.
He tried it, and people stepped up to the plate, and they called the people they need to call, and they, raised a stink about it, and you know, thank goodness things work the way they're supposed to, and then the military changed to act on that, and we're good again. But we've got to keep an eye on them, and people have to be active. They've got to call their representatives and their senators.
Keep it on.
All right,
Jim.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for calling. Let's go to Don on line one. Don, what's going on? Welcome to the show.
How you doing today?
Fine.
Very well, thank you.
Got a question and comment.
Okay.
Talk about illegal guns and stuff on the streets.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of the problem is the bad guys stealing from the good guys.
Sure, that's very true.
And a question on handguns.
Yeah, what's your question?
Am I permitted to buy a gun to keep my house without a permit?
Yes, you are. You do not have to have a permit to have it in your residence or your fixed place of business, is how the law is written. So to have it, like, in your home or in your barn, you know, just out working
out,
you're good to go. If you're on your property, you do not need the permit. If you're going to the movies,
my house to my garage,
not a problem at all.
Nope.
You do not need a permit for that.
Okay, and assault weapons.
What about them?
Can you buy one?
Yeah, that's just considered a rifle. Now, a true assault weapon is fully automatic, and there's a lot more to that. But just a good semi-automatic centerfire rifle, you do not need a permit for that or to have it in your home or anything like that either.
Okay.
All right, Don. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate
Let's go to Dale on line three. Dale, what's going on? Welcome to the Big Gun Show.
Well, yeah, this is the very first time for me. I happen to be an NRA instructor of multiple disciplines, and I'm really out of
all hell.
I'm contract working here in Fort Wayne. And I will say that your gun laws here are a lot simpler than Ohio.
Yes, they are.
Screwed up. I'm a CCW holder also. But one of the things I notice is I sport in the spring and summer an NRA jack with all my discipline rockers on it and all that. And I get people to ask me questions, but very few are willing to take the time and effort to get trained on safe handling procedures of a firearm.
Well, that's what we tell people all the time in the store. You know, it's a commitment to buying a gun, and, you know, you really need to practice.
Well, the other part of it is I also happen to be a ham radio operator of many, many years. And, you know, if this uprising, whatever the fear media is going to be, is going to really take place, the government's going to be able to control you with cell phone access. They're going to be able to control the media. They sort of do already. But ham radio, shortwave, is the only way that sometimes this word is going to get out and communications are going to be between the other people.
It's a valid point. You don't have to worry about that. And also, like,
I got kind of bad connection, so I'm going to let him go and go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, definitely communications, and you should have, and even the Department of Homeland Security saying have a communications plan for your family in case bad things happen. And get training. If you have a gun, you should have training. You wouldn't get a great dog and then not do any kind of obedience training with it and then wonder why it doesn't work. This is even more important than that. You know, if you get a firearm, make sure you get good, proper professional training so you know how to use it safely so you're not shooting what you don't want to shoot.
Great point.
Thanks.
John, welcome to the Big Gun Show.
Morning.
What's going on?
Well, I found I found some ammunition that hasn't been stored properly.
Okay.
And shells, pistol shells, it looks like maybe about 50 pounds worth.
50 pounds.
What should I do with that ammunition?
You can bring it into our store, and we'll get it to the EOD guy on the Fort Wayne Department, Fort Wayne Police Department, and he'll dispose of it properly. That's probably one of the easiest ways. You could take it directly to the police department as well. Give them a call. Let them know that was
able to handle 50 pounds.
50 pounds is a lot, but
very happy.
But we've got a good working relationship with them and a place to store it safely until they can pick it up and then dispose of it the way they do that. So that's probably the easiest way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
That's great. Thanks for calling, John. And Kevin, why don't you give out a few pointers as far as it relates to how do you properly store that ammunition? I mean, we got guys that are buying,
sure,
you know, 50, 60 boxes at a time, and who knows what they're doing with it. You're not necessarily storing it in the corner of your basement. It's not necessarily the best place to store it.
Lots of moisture there, or at least since it's like my basement could be underwater. But, yeah, you want to store it in a constant temperature. It doesn't have to be real warm, it doesn't have to be real cool, but you don't want a lot of temperature fluctuations because that causes moisture due to condensation. Yeah, so you want it in a constant temperature area, preferably a dry area. If you can, those little things that come in the top of your pill bottles, that desiccant, that's a moisture absorber, throw one of those in a Ziploc bag, and then throw your ammo in a Ziploc bag, double bag it, and then set it in the back of the cabinet or the corner, you know, somewhere, or the back of the closet. That's a great way. If you have a vacuum sealer and you can steal that from your wife for a little while, vacuum sealing it for long-term storage is great because that'll keep moisture out as well. And you also want to make sure that you keep your ammunition free and clear of any petroleum products or solvents because that will eat through to the primers and that'll degrade the reliability of the ammunition as well. That's why
you want to keep it off the ground too, correct?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
That cold and warm on like a basement floor, that
exactly
creates a lot of problems.
Yeah, like up in the cabinet and preferably on the first floor, not in the basement if you can.
It's just a cold, dry, cold, wet place.
It's in my world.
Not a good thing. Now, tell me about, like, I know we have, like, that 308 ammo that's in those battle packs.
Mm-hmm.
Keep storing it like that?
Yeah,
what it's for, right?
Yeah, just leave it in that battle pack. And that's made to be, you know, a doomsday thing for the military to where they've got ammunition that's stored that's going to be good to go 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. And there's stories of guys still, you know, the people are still shooting World War I and World War II surplus ammunition, and it works fine as long as it's been stored well. It doesn't show any signs of corrosion or degradation. If it shows those signs, obviously don't use it. But if it's just changed a little bit of color just because that's what copper does over time, sure, as long as it's clean, you'll be all right. But do make sure you clean your firearms after using any old ammunition because a lot of it is corrosive.
Yeah,
with the salts and the mercury that they used in.
Let's go to Steve real quick on line one. He's got a question about the value of a gun. Then we'll take a break. Steve, good morning. Welcome to the Big Gun Show.
Good morning. Years ago, I lived in Chicago for 9 months when I first got married.
Mm-hmm.
And our neighbor was a detective on the DuPage Sheriff's Department. We'd become friends, and a gun store was going out of business.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a Weatherby Centurion shotgun, 12 gauge.
Yeah.
Never been fired. Still in the box. And my insurance company wants me to put a rider on it.
Yeah, probably. Well, they looked up Weatherby and realized that you probably have something of some serious value. How old is the gun, approximately?
Well, we've been married for going on 33 years.
Well,
so
good for you.
Congratulations.
33 years. and I take it out twice a year and oil it down.
Mm-hmm. If you'd want to bring it in the store, we can do an official appraisal and on our letterhead, and that's good enough for insurance companies. We do that all the time, and then you can they can have that in their file, so you can get that writer for it, and we can have an appraisal for
it. Yeah, just bring it in, and you've probably got something that's worth a pretty good clip of money there. Those are expensive.
Yes,
very expensive.
Substantial.
So, great question. Thanks for calling. We're going to take a break. You're listening to H&H Farm. Kevin?
Good morning, Mark.
Well, we've kind of renewed the interest in Clinton talking about, it would be Hillary this time, talking about the assault weapons ban. She wants to protect Mexico from all the bad guys.
Yeah.
We've talked about the ammo frenzy, and that's a bad deal. And, you know, fortunately, the prices have not rose to the level of the absolute demand that the ammo. I mean, I'm telling you what,
prices are high.
Well, they're high, but they could be a lot.
From last year when the precious metals went up.
Yeah, they could be a lot. You know, being with all the demand, they could be a lot higher than they actually are. Let's take a call real quick. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Big Gun Show.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah, I have a question for you about AR-15 parts. Do you guys happen to have pistol groups or bolt carriers or...
No.
Are you having trouble getting lowers, or...
We don't do much in the way of parts, honestly. Mostly, we're just, we don't have... We have the accessories that go on, like the Picatinny rails and that kind of stuff, but we're just... We really haven't got into the whole parts and the lower stuff. We're not into that.
Yeah, and best thing to do, just go on the internet, type in what you're looking for, and find it. As far as the lower, that has to be transferred to an FFL, but the other stuff,
right.
You don't...
Do you guys have lowers?
No, I don't stock them, and I'll tell you, I just sell the whole complete guns. I don't know why. And they're hard to get. I've gotten some for a couple friends of mine, and they're just tough to get.
Like 6 to 12 weeks, and that's a fast one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Can I ask what brand you guys sell?
The last ones we got were Smiths.
Yeah, there was Smiths, but DPMS, Rock River, Bushmaster, the general, like the big five.
Do you know anything about Double Star?
No.
I've heard of them, but I don't know enough one way or the other to recommend or not recommend.
Mm-mm.
All right, good enough. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Tom. Welcome to Big Gun Show, Tom.
Yes, hello, gentlemen.
What's going on today?
Well, I'd like to further talk about the ammunition situation.
Okay.
I've heard on the radio, it's been some years back, that our military was being supplied with ammunition from China.
Mm.
Is there any truth to that?
I've heard that rumor. I have not been able to confirm that at all. A gentleman told me the other day that the Winchester White Box USA ammunition was now being made in China, and I looked all over the box. I don't think that's true. I still think that's being made by Olin Corporation over in Alton, Illinois.
Like that MagTech and stuff. I don't know.
That's Brazilian.
Yeah.
That's the South America. I have not seen any Chinese ammo that, unless it actually said, you know, like made in China for Chi-Coms. So it just, I've heard the rumor, but I haven't been able to confirm it. I think that's just a myth.
Internet rumor. So.
Well, I was at your store recently and bought some 45 Colt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's MagTech, manufactured in Brazil.
Correct, right.
So,
that's some expensive stuff, too, by the way.
I just don't believe that all the guns and ammunition are coming from this country and going to Mexico.
No, they're not. That's just...
Well, there is a high level of them. I mean, you got to remember, there's 7,600 gun FFLs on the within 100 miles of the border of Mexico. So, yeah, there's a lot of guns that are going over there. There's a lot of ammo that's going over there.
If I lived in Mexico, I'd be buying a gun.
If you lived on the border, wouldn't you be more mad if they're bringing the drugs back? I mean, I don't understand. I think it's such a non-story. I mean, sure, the violence is terrible, but you've got such a problem with people coming back over the border, and then all the drug problem. I mean, it's crazy.
Don't you believe that these anti-gun legislatures know that there's a shortage on ammunition in this country?
Well, they created it. You know, the gun sales, talking about the assault weapons ban, talking about the high-capacity ban, talking about micro-stamping and serialization of ammunition. I mean, they've hyped it all up.
So how can it all be possible that it's coming from this country? It can't be.
What do you mean? Ammunition
and firearms.
You mean going to Mexico?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not. She's just she's making up a story to push her agenda.
Yeah, I mean, they come from South America. They come from everywhere. There is a lot of guns that are going to Mexico. It is a huge problem. But what I concede is it's not the Second Amendment's problem. It's not my problem. I could care less. I mean, I'm not going to help them. I'm not going to sell them guns. I'm not part of the whatever you want to regime.
But not our
but
job
it's
to
not
solve
really,
Mexico's
it's a non-issue. You know, I'm concerned with the Second Amendment. I feel there's an assault on the Second Amendment due to the fact that they're blaming the Mexican drug cartels and the Mexican government's inability to manage those cartels properly and put them away. And, it's really not my problem.
I also was told that the Fort Wayne Police Department having a real tough time getting 223 ammo.
I think they've got a pretty good supply. I think the manufacturer, I don't think they have an overabundance. Like, I don't think anybody does right now. But, I think they've got a decent supply.
So it's coming through to them.
They're probably not doing the extra two or three trains that maybe they would like to schedule. But I think they've got a decent supply. It's okay.
Sounds okay to me.
All right. Thanks, we got to go. We got to catch a couple more calls.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Let's go to, let's try Mike on line two. Ammo question. What's going on, Mike?
Hi, guys. Great show. Wish it was longer than an hour.
Well,
thank you.
We've had a lot of commercials today, by the way. Kind of popular advertising show.
I see a lot of ads on whether it be on the internet or whether it be in the paper about ammo that, for sale. Is it legal for a person to sell ammunition the same as if they would sell a weapon?
Yeah, ammunition is not controlled by that. The only laws on it, if it's a long gun ammunition for a shotgun or a rifle, the purchaser has to be, and I would imagine the seller has to be 18 years of age. If it's handgun ammunition, they have to be 21 years of age or older. And that's pretty much it. Other than that,
if I've got 1,000 rounds, I can just take and advertise it and sell it?
Sure can.
Oh, you stick it in the peddler's post or whatever.
Yeah,
the other
that's where I see a lot of it.
Yeah, that's not a problem at all.
It's just people taking advantage of the market. You know, a lot of people bought that stuff when it's cheap, especially the 223. I mean, there's people that are buying 1,000 rounds for a couple hundred bucks, and that same 1,000 rounds of defense 223, you could sell it for, what, 900 now?
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. So the ammunition boom is no dud, as I would say. It's real. So, and it's going to continue. I don't see it letting up. I think, actually, I've said for the last 3 or 4 weeks, I thought January, February would be the worst, and March it would ease up. It's actually worse than it has ever been. So, we're searching long and hard to find ammo. And if you find a good deal, if you find a friend that needs some cash and got some ammo to get rid of, buy all you can.
All right.
Thanks for calling. Let's try and get another call in here. Kevin, should we?
Yeah. We can sneak one more in real quick.
Vic, welcome to the Big Gun Show.
Yes, good morning. I enjoy your show. I'm listening from Indianapolis.
Well, good for you. I used to live down there. I love that. It's one of my favorite cities.
Okay, I'm concerned about the micro-engraving. I think, first of all, it's not going to deter crime at all. What if I were interested in committing crime, I wouldn't use a rifle or pistol. I'd use a shotgun.
If
this law forces criminals to use shotguns, we're going to be worse off than we are today.
Well, I can one-up you with that. I'd use a revolver and keep the casing. I mean, it's crazy. It's people that don't know anything about guns making gun laws.
But if the bullets are micro-engraved, using a revolver isn't going to get you out at all.
Right.
Well, again, you're going to have to go to a sawed-off shotgun with .00 buck.
But the bad guys aren't going to obey the law anyway.
Well, but all this law is going to do is drive them to shotguns. Now, the second point I want to make is this, that if the purpose of this is to prevent crime or solve more crimes, then I think states ought to be forced to do a cost-benefit ratio on this.
Well, they've done it, and they know the cost. There isn't
no benefit. No, I don't think they have done a cost-benefit ratio at all. I think the cost to the American taxpayer and firearm user is going to be billions, And I think the number of solved crimes is going to be minuscule.
You're exactly right, but that's why they want to do it. They want to make ammunition so prohibitively expensive.
Well, but no, they need to do, the public needs to force them to do a cost-benefit analysis like any business has to do.
Yeah, they haven't done that since the early 1990s.
No, and that's another thing the NRA ought to get on them.
Enjoyed
your show, gentlemen. Thank you kindly.
Thanks for calling. And, you know, as far as the federal government, they've never met a tax they didn't like. And that's a job creation, because what they're going to do is we're going to create a state-run agency that's going to have to monitor all this ammo, so we're going to have to hire a bunch of people, then we're going to have to pay them, and we're going to charge. It's 5 cents a bullet is the state fee, but you know there's going to be more, because they can't do that for 5 cents a bullet.
That's funny,
and,
benefit analysis.
Yeah,
if they applied that to the federal government, they'd have to fire like two-thirds of them.
Well, you know. It's our government.
I'm obviously a small government.
You're a big government guy.
Yeah.
But the, it's going to keep going. And as far as the microstamping, as far as the actual projectile or the bullet, I mean, that's, you can't stamp that, can you?
Yeah, you can.
I mean, can you retrieve that information accurately?
Maybe. And it just depends on what the bullet hits and how
like
long
it's a fragmented there. Round. I mean, how are you gonna?
You may or may not. It depends on how small they make it, how many times they stamp the bullet. It could happen, but it's not going to happen every time. It's not going to be 100% guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things we're going to have to stay aware.
May not work.
And just prevent it from happening by being.
And the other thing is stamping the shell casing. That's a big thing, and that's supposedly the cheapest way to do it, right?
Yes.
And then that would just drive revolver sales through the roof.
It would.
Yeah. So that's good. So continue to buy shotguns, I guess. Well, it's been a good show. We've talked about our friend Hillary.
Well, I thought I had a little more to that that show. It had some. I think the other part had some better stuff on it. But I'll keep looking around here for it. Had a little interference because that was AM radio. One of the problems I have, like I've told you before, I have tape recorders all over the house sitting around waiting for any kind of news comes through. And sometimes I don't have the cassette rewound. And so I end up putting something important on and half of the cassette is already gone. So then I have trouble going back and finding what I did. But which means that whenever I'm through with a cassette, I need to erase everything and rewind it, and then we're all ready to go. Because sometimes I miss things that I would like to share with you. But it's quite an interesting Fibber McGee type operation, I'll tell you that. You know, and of course my honey, I have to quick tell her to. She don't like that much either. So instead of using the small pocket tape recorders that you got to have an open mic on, I should have cassette recorders, regular radio type in position at all times. That way we don't get any background noise through. Now, here's something we're looking to do, and I just come across with this brainstorm this morning. There's a lot of really good stuff, like from Joom, the predictor of doom. He sends us a lot of real good stuff that he prints up, and other people do, like the philosopher and other people. What I want is to find someone that has a real good recording voice and maybe has done readings for recordings before, like books on tape or whatever, and we'll check these out, edit them a little bit, and give them to you, and you record them like on an MP3 or even tape if you don't have the facilities to do it other ways, and get it to us, and then we want to use these not only on updates, phone update machine, but we want to use them on radio. And I'm talking about CB and so forth. So I'll be broadcasting about every day pretty soon on CB. Now you can obviously that kind of stuff doesn't have a lot of range, but at night and under certain conditions, and I'm not sure what the sunspot cycle is right now for CB frequencies or 10 meters. So I know we got some ham radio operators out there that can look that up for me. But anyhow, it's not illegal to talk politically on CB radio. They get upset with you on ham radio, but I think we're looking at a time when it's not going to make much difference what people think or what they say. You're just going to have to get the job done. So anyhow, someone wants to volunteer to do our recording on some of these things, I'd appreciate you getting in touch with me. And we're getting a lot of people really like DC Wolf. They really like his shows. So yesterday, you know, I think I'm going to start sending some things out Sunday morning because we're getting so many contributors now, and that's great. But yesterday, I recorded onto MP3 DC Wolf at a lower volume, and I sent it out. I got worried about that, so I went back in and recorded at a louder volume, and I could boost up here in the studio. And I sent it out too, and then I got notices back where a whole lot of people didn't, well, not a whole lot, but some of the people didn't get the show. Now, if you didn't get show 3 from Wolf DC, let me know, and I'll get it out to you. And incidentally, the reason you didn't get Wolf DC 2 was because we had a little problem there. So I'm sure we'll probably get a hold of it today, and we'll make DC Wolf second show available to you. So anyhow, let's see what we're going to do here. I don't know. Let me look around. We got so damn many things here we can put on. It's unbelievable. I got a whole lot of Gorilla Radio Man. A lot of his stuff. He's old Frankie sent them to me, and that he's pre-recording them now. So we got about, I don't know, 7 or 8 shows backed up here from him. So we got a lot of stuff for you to hear. Well, let's go to Gorilla Wall Street for a comment this morning. One problem we're having, we may not have this problem in the future, we're trying to correct it, is he's trying to show you his charts, which are quite important to what he's saying. We've got about a 7-minute blurb from Gorilla Wall Street. And if we can improve these charts for you, we will. So just be patient.
Gorilla Wall Street charting and picking. Lesson 2. This time I've added 3 more lines, as you can see on either chart. We'll just take a quick look at the 6-month and get an overview. That green line there is a resistance line, and the reason I picked it is it matches a high volume close. Now the two red lines are support levels, and the reason I picked them this time is because they match up with gaps. And if we take a look at the detail, the 6-month detail chart, it's a lot easier to see. On the February 10th, that's when that high volume day took place, and it exactly matches the close of that day. And you can see how we ran into it, and now we're pulling back on the right. You see how we ran into that green line. And then now what we're aiming for are those red support levels, and you can see the gaps. They're a little bit hard to see, the second one, but it's there. And sometimes they make it easy for you. Very rarely, though. Usually you have to search around a little bit more. But this time we've got a pretty clear case here. And they also match the volumes, the price volumes on the right, which gives a little more credence to the fact that it looks like we're going to do about a 50% retracement here, back down to the $19, $20, $21 range. So that's about it for this time. We'll go into it, and hopefully Wednesday or so, and we'll see how we do. You know, like I can't tell the future, but we'll just check it out on Wednesday. And eventually, if these things help out, you know, Tommy's box number is P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. 5 words and always 14 words.
Sound like a bunch of niggers at a party. Both the niggers don't like Obama now. Hey, Tommy, it's really heating up down here in Texas. I'm trying to check out this SCB, Sons of the Confederate Veterans, Tommy. Have you ever heard of that? You can type in your last name, it'll take you, it'll tell you if your ancestors fought in the Civil War on the southern side. And I've just found out that the SCB people, they don't like the KKK because they think the KKK stole that flag. You know, actually that flag was a Navy flag. People don't realize that. Confederate flag. I had six ancestors that died at the Alamo from some fucking Mexicans that killed my ancestors. It took 3,000 Mexicans to kill 367 white people, or considered warriors. And I'm getting $250 per ancestor per month. Just got to find the rest of them up on the burial ground. They left me some land. Never claimed it, so it's all in my name. So I'm going out to San Antonio and claiming the fucking land, Tommy. Maybe build me a bunker down there. Or sell it and move up to where you're at, Warsaw, Indiana, maybe next door. Is there any land available? Tommy, what the hell is going on with these damn bailout shit? I'm really fucking confused, man. Nobody bailed me out, but I lost my house in a foreclosure. Now I'm having to start and rebuild my own self again. Nobody's helped me rebuild. It's just a fucking waste of fucking bullshit. We are to say, hey, no more taxes, tax the foreigners, don't tax the whites. You know, this don't make sense to me. Why be equal?
Well, first of all, it was 7,000 Mexican troops that attacked the Alamo. 7,000, not 3,000. So, it was even worse than what you think. And let's see, what else? You know, one thing that we need to do, and I've mentioned this before, is call your local state representative, state senator, and tell them, now look, they're giving drug tests to all us boys working on the line, all us factory workers and so forth working for these big companies. We think it's time that you start giving drug tests to those receiving social welfare benefits. And I don't think there should be a problem there if people are not they shouldn't have money to spend on drugs anyhow. I mean, you know. So tell them let's have a new law. You like laws? Here's a good law. And let's drug test all the congressmen and senators before they go into work. The state representatives and state all those state people too. Let's drug test them all. Don't just drug test the poor working man. No, that's not right. And if you can lay claim to a bunch of land down there in San Antonio, you go to it, and then you'll have to figure a way of getting the Mexicans out of there. And you can't hurt any of them, though.
Well, yeah, Tom, so what do you think that they want to bring back the assault weapons ban? Because, you know, we're sending all our assault weapons down to the Mexicans so they can kill each other in Mexico. I think that's a good thing, don't you? Let them all kill each other. I think it's great for us to have a civil war in Mexico.
Well, yeah, Hillary wants to blame it on us because we've got the Second Amendment. We got the Second Amendment up here, so she wants to solve the Mexican crime problem by taking your guns up here. Isn't that typical of someone who's been trained by Saul Alinsky, the Marxist street agitator, and... Of course, you know, she was trained. Also, Cesar Chavez was trained by Saul Alinsky out of Chicago, and so was Obama, the presidente from Kenya. How about that? Yeah. Well, I say let them tear the shit out of southern Texas, too, on this side of the border. Shoot each other up. Get those gangs warring against each other. And then that'll finally get white people into a position where they got to do something. But you know, a lot of those border towns on our side of the border are almost all Mexican now. I mean, they may have a white mayor, they may even have a couple of white city councilmen, but otherwise they're becoming all Mexican. A lot of them have been all Mexican for a long time. So I don't really care what narco-terrorism does to us, but I do care up here in Chicago where narco-terrorism is alive and well. And they just haven't flexed their muscles too much except against each other. And they're out sending their boys out into the hinterlands out here and the small towns getting set up. And they're hiding among the illegal aliens. So that's a good card you should play when you call in to talk shows and so forth. That, the illegal aliens, they might not be bad people, but the narco-terrorists are hiding among them, maybe intimidating them. And many of them, their family, narco-terrorists are in the family, and the Mexicans are highly loyal to families, help a lot more than white people. Well, I forgot to mention to you that one of the reasons they're not really U.S. government doing much down there on the border at Laredo and like that is because there's massive amounts of trucks coming through there every day carrying produce in the United States because we're not growing enough produce anymore. And they're getting it cheaper down there with their Mexican stoop labor, so they've got hundreds of trucks lined up every day coming through that border, bringing fruit and vegetables and all kinds of stuff in, and that's where they hide the damn drugs. But here you go, the government guys, they're on the horns of a dilemma. They don't want to slow down the food coming into the country because the prices are going to go sky high. But yet, every one of those trucks should be ripped apart. I watched on television a show called DEA yesterday, and they went through all this elaborate stuff to track down one semi that had a whole giant load of methamphetamines. But they had to have an informant, and then they weren't sure, and finally they got the truck, and then they had to unload the truck, and then they were sweating peach seeds that they would not find the drugs and they'd be sued and everything else. So you see, if they start going through every one of those Mexican trucks coming through, or those trucks period, really going and looking for the drugs, well, kiss the fruit prices goodbye. They're going to soar right through the roof in your local market. So think about that.
Well, you got it all right, Tommy. As a former military man, I definitely see China as a threat. I think a lot of servicemen, we take it as a slap in the face that our government, or better yet, those the corporate elite would do business with the damn Orientals. It's a big mistake. And I look at all the business and whatnot, it's pretty much farmed out all of our fucking work over there. Now there's nothing left. But you're right, they are the biggest threat that faces us. But hey, let's fucking give them eminent domain, too, while we're at it. It's pretty sad.
Well, for everybody that's losing, somebody's gaining. Yeah. You see, if the government was for the people, by the people, and all that stuff, this wouldn't be happening. But this government serves the interests of the big shots, the oligarchs. It doesn't serve your interests. Your interests come last. Yeah. And so, no, they're dealing with the Chinese because they're making billions, private individuals and the rich class in this country. I mean, the super rich. So, this is no mistake. They're not making an error because they're simply looking out for themselves like pretty much they always did. I mean, let's face it. There is class warfare, always has been, probably always will be. You even have it among the white race. Even if you had an all-white country, you'd have a problem working class trying to hold their own against the super rich. And the only answer to that is have like an armed citizen militia that if politicians got out of line and were serving the interests of the oligarchs, their offices would be taken over and they would be taken out and shot. When there's a lot of money involved, you have to have a very strong deterrent. Anything less than maybe life imprisonment or execution won't stop them because they're making too damn much money. You can't slap them on the fingers and send them to the golf course prison for 2 or 3 years. You know, if you steal millions and maybe billions, you get a few years into clink. Sometimes less than 5 years. You go out and rob a liquor store or something, steal too many loaves of bread, you're going to wait for 20 years. So as long as you have the misapplication of justice like that, crime is going to flourish at the top even more than at the bottom.
You know who I am. I won't mention my name because, as you said, that's stupid. But I'm the guy who works as a subcontractor for CSX. And every day on the CSX trains, which is one of the larger railroads on the East Coast, I would dare say anywhere from 15 to 20% of the cars they haul are Costco, Chinese Overseas Shipping Corporation, a fully owned subsidy of the People's Red Army. The person who is the essentially the CEO of Costco is a four-star general in the People's Red Army. The only thing that we ship back to China is scrap metal. Jeez, you think they could be used for some of those endless lines of tanks in the story you just gave? I think so. Several years ago, a couple of colonels with the Chinese military intelligence branch wrote a paper that turned into a book called Unconventional Methods of Warfare for the 21st Century, or How to Deal with the Coming Threat. They laid out in perfect clarity that the battlefield of the 21st century would not be a conventional battlefield. It would be information, the internet, people, every imaginable field that you can think of. And everyone would be a combatant. They're applying it. We were warned. And our leaders, quote unquote, sat around with their proverbial fingers up their assholes. We're reaping the benefits of their incompetence and their stupidity and their greed. As for the Jews, well, you know, their arrogance is going to be their end. Because there won't be any satisfaction to us if we get dusted off. But the Chinese are probably the only people on this planet, and I hate to say this, because it galls me no end, but the Chinese probably are the only people on this planet who have the goddamn balls and the motivation to F every last Jew on this planet. Because they will not tolerate that kind of shit. I know some Chinese people, and where there is basically halfway decent folks, they tell me pretty much what I've told you. And I'm sure you've known this already, but the sad thing is that the GDP, the generally dumb public of the United States, couldn't care less. And as Paul Harvey used to say, that's the rest of the story, Tom. You take care. Be safe.
Well, I just saw today in the news on the radio this morning where they're suspecting the Chinese, or actually have caught them in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization computers. And we know they've been stealing secrets from us, so-called. And I knew that was going to happen because I remember going into bookstores in San Francisco and L.A., and the place would be jammed with Asians, and they'd be speed-reading all these technical books. That was 20 years ago. So they were speed-reading, not even buying the books. They were speed-reading the technical books and, of course, reporting back to good old China. Yeah. Yeah, well, we cannot anymore afford our government. I don't think we can afford the central government anymore. I think it needs to be broken up. I think the country needs to be broken up. These guys are our worst enemies, and they're not our representatives. They're representatives of the extremely rich people and the corporations and so forth, and the ideologues. And so I'm becoming more and more going back to Kropotkin and and the boys, the anarchists. I think, Bob Miles was talking about that, racial anarchism. And it's not a perfect answer, but I'm becoming more and more of that frame of mind that if we're going to save ourselves, we have to just totally forget the federal government altogether, treat it as a total, complete, absolute enemy. We can't afford it. They rob from the people, and then they borrow from foreign countries, and pretty soon the Chinese, and they're going to be wanting to trade some of those dollar bills they got over there for land, and they're going to be coming in here and buy it. And these greedy, speculating real estate people, you know how they were about the blacks. Well, we can't do anything about the blacks moving in your neighborhood because the law says it. You have to sell to them. In California, we had the Rumford Fair Housing Bill that took away your property rights and said that you have to sell to whoever comes at you with the money. Well, that was the end of, really, California. And that happened way back in 64. And it just took a long time for the aerospace industry to sort of wind down and Cold War military production to wind down, and now California is in the pits, and there's no way out for California because they don't have the balls to run the illegal aliens out. And the illegal, and now the narco gangs are so strong in East LA and places like that that they would erupt in total violence in a very quick order if the governor starts rounding up the illegals and shipping them out. So California's beginning to look like what happened to Portugal, on the west coast of Spain. Sort of almost the same type of an idea. They had colonies and went out and they brought a lot of the blacks came back into Portugal and race mixed, and Portuguese soldiers went into these African nations and brought back black wives and all that kind of stuff, and Portugal fell. California's doing about the same thing, and it's really horrible because I wish I had an expeditionary army of about 10,000 guys. We'd take California and turn it back the way we had it, and where California was a great, wonderful, beautiful state. What a fantastic piece of real estate to lose to these damn muds and wogs. And instead of fighting, well, I don't know, boys. Sooner or later, we're going to have to do something.
We warned about this Chinese thing. For years and years. But you're right. We don't deserve to survive. Because we're too fat and lazy. One third of our race, child to adult, are obese. And like pigs going to the slaughter. We did our best. We're still doing our best, Tom. But they wouldn't listen to us. They're starting to listen to us now, but they need to come to the plate because you're up in age. I'm 58 with diabetes and high blood pressure. I can still shoot, but I'm not the man I was 20 years ago. But the next generation, the men who are 45 and younger, they better get with the program, because you're right. I don't think these bastards are worth fighting for unless they're willing to stand up and do some fighting themselves. Excellent message. It's the Red Chinese are definitely the most dangerous. Goddamn Nixon and goddamn Republicans for opening up China. Goddamn Kissinger. But that goddamn Nixon, goddamn back in 70, I heard about this shit. I knew it was, I was like 21 years old. I said, why would we deal with Red China for? Good message, Tom. Keep up with the work.
A terrible Tommy calling from California, the fascist state of Disneyland, once run by Mickey Mouse Reagan. The other side of the coin on that red chink or pro-red chink or anti-red chink thing is you can't blame the red chinks for taking advantage of the stupidity and the greed of the Zionist occupation government and the two-bit politicians in this country. They don't create the stupidity of the ruling class. All they do is take advantage of it. And you got to give the red chinks credit. That 2008 Peking or Beijing Olympics, that was the most spectacular Olympics in all recorded human history. say one thing for the Red Chinks. They are smart. There's no question about that. Unlike the ruling class, the capitalist pigs in the society that sits in Washington or Sacramento, who haven't got a brain in their head because they're so goddamn genetically inbred. Don't underestimate the Red Chinks. They're as bright as they have to be. Hey, bye.
Very informative, excellent article. Just a few things. No insult to June, but first of all, as he's indicated, it's not our government. Second of all, the military buildup of tanks in China, that's a crock of shit. That's just all for show. And secondly, they're probably going to sell those off to some other shitty nation. Most of those tanks never get used. It's the same thing with the Russians with the fake Cold War buildup. And, you know, as far as the Chinks coming after us, they're already in this country, so we have more Chinks here than we probably do in friggin' China. So we're already invaded on the ground. They have human intelligence all around us, like you mentioned, the Pentagon. MIT, for example, and Cambridge takes in a large amount of Chinks, and they pay them full tuition and everything else for defense contract companies usually set up by the U.S. government. You got Boston University is paying $10,000, or they were, per Chink family to bring in, attract new engineers. So, this shitty, no good son of a bitch showboat government here has more or less invited these people in with open arms and paving the way. And let's not forget Nixon threatened the Russian president at the time, back in the 60s, who was going to nuke China. If he did such a thing, they would attack the Russians. And so white Russia was willing to clean up fucking the Chinks back in the 60s. And this no good cocksucker Nixon told him no way, no dice. So once again, these people in charge of the helm here have had our supposed interest, not in the best interest, to be honest with you. And yeah, I don't see China really. I just see white self-destructing, more or less, in this country. And our backs are up against the wall. So, hey, maybe we could formulate a blueprint. The Chinks probably have it, though. Where we could just tell the Chinks that they do have those capabilities. Like, put targets, like, on the ABL offices. Let's see, Bernie Madoff, people like that that are in charge of these big Jew corporations that stole all this money. And that'd be kind of funny. Could send it off to the Chinks in a way. Hey, use the enemy as tactical, if you can. But that's about it for now. And keep up the good work.
Yeah, that was Brezhnev back in the 70s. Yeah, he... He sent word to Nixon. He was he was preparing to nuke China, and you know, Nixon said, "Oh no, if you do that, we'll nuke you." Well, whoopee. Another thing to remember is a lot of people don't understand. It used to be, you know, when people talk about the Jews, they say, "I'll bet you think there's Jewish Chinese." Well, there are Jewish Chinese. There had been synagogues in China for 1,000 years. So the Jews did go into China, and they used to, of course, cover up their head because they were a kinky-haired group of people. You know, all this stuff about the Israelites being blue-eyed and blonde, all that is that I used to be into, actually, but it's crap. It's nonsense. The Jews of that day, even at the time of Judges, were identified as a kinky-haired, dwarfish people. They were not big, tall Aryans. But anyhow, they went into China, and as they inbred, and this is the way they always do, you see, they inbreed with the dominant race, and then rise up in their royalty and or economics or whatever. And as they inbred, then their hair started straightening out. So now a Jew with Jew think in China, you couldn't tell them from a regular Chinese. So that may have been another reason. See, that was the Sassoons that controlled the economy in South in Asia, like the Rothschilds in Europe. And so you don't hear many people talking about the Sassoons. I believe that's how you pronounce the name. But anyhow, if I don't pronounce it right, I know one of my buddies will tell me. They always do.
Hey, Tom. Cody, up here in Washington. Very interesting message. I'm familiar with a lot of that. I have a background in Asian and Japanese and Far East history, studied in college. Interesting thing about the communist Chinese, you know, when the Japanese were in their military campaign chasing around Chiang Kai-shek in the 1930s, that allowed the communist Chinese under Mao to go and spread their roots in a grassroots campaign around the villages and the countryside in China. And it wasn't until the 1970s, at least 20 years after the communists had firmly established themselves in China, that they came out on TV and they formally thanked the Japanese for having invaded China in the 1930s and 40s, because if it wasn't for the Japanese military campaign of aggression in China, that the communists would never have been able to actually have gained the ascendancy. Because you see, well, while the Japanese were chasing around Chiang Kai-shek from city to city to city, and when he eventually ended up over in Taiwan, the communists had free rein to go and sow their seeds of discontent. Yes, it's a very interesting situation with the Chinese. Nobody really knows how this is going to pan out, but I'm definitely very angry. I'm very vengeful against the Jews for having spread our ICBM technology to the Chinese, and I think there's got to be hell to pay for that. But the horse is already out of the barn, you know, and we could have had a great white pan-Aryan civilization and empire. We could have been taking vacations to Mars, you know, if Hitler had won and then like that. But that didn't happen, and so instead the Chinese have been jump-started. They've been fast-forwarded hundreds of years into the future with our technology, and we're going to have to end up fighting them whether we win or we lose in this struggle, and that sucks. And so, like, you know, the horse is already out of the barn. You can't bring the horse back in. He's long gone. He's trotting it. He's hightailing it down the field. So it doesn't matter what we talk about or whatever. You know, what's done is done. So, yeah, I guess when people say, you know, it would have been better if we would have won this battle years ago, I agree with that, because if we ever recover as a race or as a world, you know, or as a people, we can only recover to a certain point, because the fact is the Chinese have our technology. And the Jews gave it to them, and the CIA and the NSA knows it, and so do the Israelis. And it really sucks, especially knowing the fact that they would have never gotten the fucking ICBM technology in hundreds of years if it hadn't been for the fact that the Israelis stole our technology and gave it to them. So fuck them, fuck the Israelis. Because the Chinese are dangerous. I know it, you know it, and they know it.
Thank you.
weather it is, it's been fried in the rain. My chaps are white, my shirt is red, I'll wear my steps until I'm dead. I keep my boots on the table. I bred cows and turn them free, but the brand ain't what it used to be, cause now I ride a horse with the union label. Old Pete, old Pete, a prouder horse there ain't, cause my old Pete is a horse with a union label. When I was a little feller and I seen a cowboy picture, my daddy told me, a cowboy's life is mighty lean when he ain't hurting cows on a movie screen. So hear what your daddy's advising. When you swing your lariat, you're one of them proletariats. So find yourself a horse and start a organizing. I went down to the old corral to pick me out a bronco, like my daddy told me. I looked them over one by one, and there was a great big stallion, like you won't find in no millionaire stable. He was wild and proud and free, and he pulled this guy and looked at me, and blazing on his side was a union label. Old Pete, old Pete, a prouder horse there ain't, cause my old Pete is a horse with a union label. The foreman, he was standing there and said, my God, he ride him, ain't he just snickered. Cause the SOB was a company man, which is why he landed on his skin and ran home crying for mother. But I showed Pete my union card and he says to me, climb right out, partner, I got plenty room for a union brother. Now someday I'll be laid to rest, but I've got a feeling Pete, he'll never die. He'll thunder on through the wild with heat to be on time in a union meeting, strong and fearless and able. And working people through the land will know who's a good American and rides on the horse with the union label. Old Pete, old Pete, a prouder horse there ain't, cause my old Pete
Label. Well, that's about it for today. Boys and girls, hope a couple of songs were from back in 1914, 1915 labor songs. We'll be back with you tomorrow. We may have another show today, I'm not sure yet. Yeah. But tell your friends if they want a sample of those illegal alien hunting licenses, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope and I'll send you a sample free, and then we can go from there. Okay, that's about it. 14-5, and hope you enjoy Gorilla Wall Street today. Sure. Later.
Calling all ghost wolves. This is Ghost Wolf Radio calling. Ghost Wolf Radio calling. Ghost Wolf Gorilla White Werewolf Radio calling. Calling all revolutionary minded white Occidental transplanted European people who have had enough. Who have had enough of watching their race go down the drain. Who have had enough of watching rich white politicians, bankers, and other elitists destroy our race. Now's the time for some true revolutionary words. Some might is right.
Are you so desperate to fight criminals that you lock yourself in to take them on one at a time?
I shall never.
So, I count at six, Mr. Wayne.
How do you know my name?
The world is just
small for someone like Bruce Wayne to disappear. No matter how nothing confuses us. Who are you?
My name is merely Ducard, but I speak for Ra's al Ghul, and I'm greatly feared by the criminal underworld. The man who can offer you a path.
Makes you think I need a path.
Someone like you is only here by choice. So I've been exploring the criminal fraternity, but whatever your original intentions, you have become truly lost.
From what path can Ra's al Ghul offer?
Part of the man who shares his hatred of evil and wishes to serve true justice. A part of the League of Shadows.
The vigilantes.
No. The vigilante is just a man lost in a scramble for his own gratification. He can be destroyed or locked up.
If you're bored of brawling with petty thieves and want to achieve something, there is a rare blue flower that grows on the eastern slopes. Pick one of these flowers. If you can carry it to the top of the mountain, you may find what you were looking for in the first place.
What was I looking for?
Only you can know that.
Prepare for your train.
Wait.
Your own fear.
Are you ready to begin?
I can barely stand.
Death does not wait for you to be ready.
Death is not considerate of all land.
And make no mistake. Tear your face again. Your guilt with anger. I will teach you to confront it and to face the truth. You know how to fight six men. We can teach you how to engage 600. You know how to disappear. We can teach you to become completely invisible.
Invisible.
Ninja, understand that invisibility is a matter of patience and agility. Always mind your surroundings. Ninjutsu employs explosive powders as weapons or distractions. Theatricality and deception are powerful agents. You must become more than just a man in the mind of your opponent.
That's right.
Your father.
Who is he?
He was a farmer, and he tried to take his neighbor's land and became a murderer. Now he is a prisoner.
What will happen to you?
Justice. I'm going to
cannot be tolerated. Criminals thrive on the indulgence of society's understanding. Your parents' death was not your fault. It was your father's.
Thank you.
feel terror cloud your senses. The demon's power is stored. To control. And now that this power can be yours,
right? That was impressive. If you guys didn't catch some of those last words, he said embrace your worst fears. And then Bruce Wayne, in training as a ninja, opened up that basket and all them bats came out. And then he said focus, concentrate, master your senses. Now I'll take truth from whatever corner it comes from. I don't care if it comes from a black, brown, or yellow. But in this case, it came from an Irish actor or British actor. I don't know what Liam Neeson is. I know he's from the UK. And I don't even know who wrote the script for that. A lot of truth in a lot of that dialogue. And of course, Hollywood has to portray that person who speaks like that as the bad person, as the villain. Well, you know what? All moral codes are relative. What's evil now wasn't evil 100 years ago. Interracial couples were evil 100 years ago. Now they're fashionable. We just have the misfortune of living in a sick and perverted time. And we have the misfortune, and maybe the fortune, depending on how you look at it, of living in a time when America is truly, truly nothing like what our grandfathers knew. And maybe it was like that then too, but they were just so much more deceived than we are. Ghost Wolf Radio is brought to you by the Insurgency Radio Network. And the fact that I'm doing this show is all made possible by a very open-minded insurgent and very proud white racist, Tom Metzger. Tom can be reached at tm_Metzger@yahoo.com. You can write Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana 46581. He's got training DVDs ready to be borrowed. You can keep them as long as you want. So borrow them. You can call the Aryan Update line. Every few days, Tom puts out a new message. That's 574-267-5036. I'll tell you what, I'll take truth from whatever corner it comes from. Because I'll tell you what, you know, when he grounded up that blue flower and added that hot steaming water to it, it made it an hallucinogen that Bruce Wayne breathed in, and he had to overcome not only Liam Neeson's character attacking him from the shadows and mixing in with the men that were standing in formation there, but he had to overcome the hallucinogen also, as well as being attacked. I'll tell you what, you need to seek out all aspects of training. You will be a much more perfect ghost wolf if you can achieve the highest skill level you can in martial arts, in weapons training, firearms training, and knowledge of tactics. If you just do those things right there, that's 10% of the battle, and 90% of the battle just having will, having balls, you know? When he put on his mask, or when after he breathed in that hallucinogenic flower, whatever it was, he said things like, "You have to become a terrible thought." And you, Ghost Wolf, you have to become a terrible thought in the minds of white people and Zog. Not unless you just want to listen to these shows and get your ears tickled and just be entertained. And you can laugh at me, call me a jag-off, do whatever you want, but you know what? Our race is still dying. What have I done for my race? I'm doing this fucking show. That's what I'm doing for my race. Okay? I gave up doing things on my own just so I can share some insights. Insights that have worked for me. He said you have to be a wraith. Wraith is a ghost. Spelled W-R-A-I-T-H. Wraith. Be a ghost. You're already there. Ghost wolf. You could be a terrible thought and a wraith in the minds of society because you're working by yourself and you're not in with a bunch of guys who can potentially sell you out for a lighter sentence. You have nothing to worry about. The chance of you being taken down by Zog or anyone else are almost nil. You have to become an idea, he said. And you could be a great idea in the minds of white people. You can really spur them on just with your actions. Who cares if most of white society will hate you because of what you do? But you'll wake up that hardcore 1%, 2% that we need on our side. Have you guys been tagging resist.com in anywhere? Just putting it anywhere. Go to the library. Looking up books on European history. Writing it in the pages. Writing it in the inside cover. I don't know. I'm not telling you guys to go out there and do that, but I know Eric Blackburn did that in my novel. You know. On the other flip side of this tape, I was talking about the blacks moving into Berwyn. Man, I'm seeing a lot of them. Seeing a lot of them. And I'm telling you, this mortgage thing. You know, the banks that own this property, you know, I'm not telling you guys to go out there and do anything. I'm not trying to be a bad guy. I don't want to be a bad guy. I don't see myself as a tough guy or a criminalistic guy. But I would just love to turn on CNN one day, just hear about all these abandoned homes with the foreclosure sign on them, just go up and smoke. You don't got to worry about the ones in the black community. Well, like I said before, the blacks will buy the foreclosed home in the black communities, but the foreclosed homes in the white community, the black and brown will buy those. I'm telling you, it's a little added plus to the system with this whole corrupt thing. It wasn't incompetent, it was corrupt. Was that more populations, more diverse ethnic groups were going to be shuffled around. And that's exactly what's happened. So... All right, for the remainder of this tape, I'll be reading out of FM 21-75. This is Ghost Wolf Radio Tape 3, Program 6. Combat training of the individual soldier and patrolling. Techniques. The enemy uses many different propaganda techniques. He tries to convince you that unless you surrender, you will be killed. And if you do surrender... You will be well treated. That sounds like guys who were promised lighter sentences for selling out their comrades. And they sure end up still doing 20 to 25 years. 25 years is a long time. He tries to lower your morale and decrease your will to fight and telling you your leaders are your leaders are incompetent or the civilians at home have forgotten about you. And you help his cause if you believe and spread the rumors. you believe the rumor, your morale is lowered when you find out it's not true. Like, for example, you know, in this case, you're talking about, you know, Viet Cong were saying, hey, you guys are being released soon. You guys are going to be going home. And then when the troops found out it wasn't true, you know, the morale went down. This all falls under psychological operations, which I'll talk about in another show. Other rumors are designed to create fear. Still others attempt to create a feeling of hatred towards our allies or soldiers and our own forces because of their race or creed. You know, I see that in our own race. I see the butt of all jokes of the white race in America are the southern white man, the rednecks, the hillbillies. Nowhere else in comedy or anywhere else has anybody made to look more foolish or stupid or irreverent as the southern white man. And these southern white men that see that on your TV screen, and you see that Larry the Cable Guy, who's not even southern, who's nothing but a fucking pig and portrays the southern white men as pigs and perverts and dumbasses. Why this guy's not walking around in society with a bulletproof vest and a fucking platoon of fucking security guards protecting his ass? It just amazes me you guys would let this guy just, you know, fucking go untouched like that. Really. We're talking about when you're in a defensive position, and if you clear too much vegetation in your field of fire, that will be detected by the enemy, and your enemy will, you know, avoid that. So, you want to, it says, only underbrush and trees directly in the line of fire are removed. Okay? Too much clearing debris and debris not removed, enemy will avoid that. Just looks too suspicious. Okay? You just want to thin it out some, but you want to be able to still engage your enemy. Alright, worry undermines the body, it dulls the mind, it slows down thinking and learning, it adds to confusion and magnifies your troubles, causing you to imagine things that really don't exist. Your officers and non-commissioned officers will help you if you have problems with such, with things troubling you. Well, since you guys are working on your own, you just go by the four-step formula I've been talking about. Set a goal, visualize your success, self-talk, days, weeks in advance before the op, and right before the op, during the op, and even after the op when you're evading, deep meditative breathing, arousal control. Don't let yourself get panicked. Alright, transport and immersion front. I talked about that on the other side, but let me go into it more depthly here. In cold or wet weather, improper care of your feet may result in a condition known as trench foot or immersion foot. When the condition is mild, the feet are pale and look shriveled. Later, they lose all feeling. Still later, they swell and become very painful. This is the dangerous stage. Gangrene may result and require amputation of the toes or even the entire foot. To guard against trench foot, immersion foot, follow the simple rules. Exercise your feet. You know, if you're standing for a long time, you know, go up on your tippy toes and then back down, you know. Rock on your heels. Keep your feet as clean as possible. Keep your feet as dry as possible. You know, I really don't know why I outline that, because you guys really don't need to worry about that, because you guys aren't going to be doing any ops where you're going to be in the field for 4 to 5, 6 days. What I'm proposing, and you know, I want to keep putting this picture in your mind, the International Underground Order Consortium Brotherhood of the Ghost Wolf cannot be taken down, it cannot be infiltrated, it cannot be spied upon, because no one knows each other. Nobody contacts each other. Remember what I said, even if we were to network, it'd be a face-to-face, we are a face-to-face insurgency. We do not communicate electronically or electronically at all. I don't know what the fuck I just said. We don't use email, telephone, or none of that stuff to network. Just like these Middle Eastern terror cells in the Middle East. Not that we're terrorists, even though I strongly advocate fourth generation warfare. But anyway, you know, like what Russell Crowe said in the beginning of that movie, Body of Lies. You know, they were dealing with people who went back to the Stone Age, and you just can't infiltrate them or surveil them because they're not using any kind of electronics. And they, you know, they talk about anything, it's always face to face, and they have over-the-top security measures to keep, you know, prying eyes out. Think about that. All right, combat intelligence is that knowledge of the enemy, the weather, and the terrain, which is used to plan and conduct tactical operations in a given area. Counterintelligence in combat includes all the necessary, all the measures and actions taken. One, deny the enemy information of your plans, intentions, and activities. Two, detect the enemy's efforts to obtain information. Three, deceive the enemy as to our true plans and intentions. You know what? If you guys stay by yourself, you guys just stay single. Stay being your one-man team. Just a one. You have no one to answer to, but you can't rest on your laurels. You can't say, well, I did a lot of shit 2 years ago. No. What have you done for the race lately? That needs to be your motto. You know, you don't got to worry about people, you know, trying to take you down or whatever. I mean, they'd have to, first you have to become a person of interest. If you don't have a criminal history, you don't talk about race in public with your friends, with your family, you don't have any racial tattoos, and if you do, you're getting them covered up. And if your family and friends inquire why, you know what, I'm just, man, I've just been doing this shit for too long. I just want to, you know, just start taking each person, one person at a time. And maybe a lot of you don't have the intestinal fortitude to do that. Maybe you feel like you're selling out your race. Or maybe there's not enough of us out there that got the balls to do this. Listen, when I got exposed during my time at in the National Alliance, when I was sold out, I didn't backpedal and become scared. I went the other direction. And I'm not going to talk too much in depthly about that, but we're just looking for a few good men. Like I said a couple tapes ago, five guys. Three guys in England. Three guys in Germany. You know? A couple guys in Australia. Get this thing going. We don't need a whole army. Your role in counterintelligence. Report suspicious personnel such as natives loitering in your area. Well, you know what? You got to be a person of interest. You got to be doing stuff that gets people's attention. You guys don't do that. You swim in the sea to people. You have perfected the art of being forgotten about 5 minutes after someone talks to you. Right? I mean, you're doing that, right? You're not showing off. You're not driving fancy cars, right? Listen, we're looking for the bland. We're looking to look bland and uninteresting in the eyes of society, so we can better swim in the sea of the people. And if that hurts your pride, well, then maybe you just don't give a damn about the race. All right, prisoners of war. If we ever become a cell structure and we're dealing with prisoners of war, let's use the five S's. They are search, segregate, silence, speed, and safeguard. We search prisoners for weapons, documents. As soon as we capture them, we take weapons to prevent resistance and take documents except individual identification papers. Fuck that, we're taking that too. To prevent the prisoners from destroying them. Prisoners from whom personal property is taken, including personal documents, should be given a written... We ain't giving them a damn receipt about nothing because they're not getting anything back. Tag documents and other personal property, whatever. Okay, so we'll search them. Second S, segregate them into groups. Officers, non-commissioned officers, privates, deserters, civilians, males, females, political indoctrination personnel. This prevents the leaders from organizing a mass escape and from making the rest of the prisoners security-minded. Keep the prisoners segregated as you evacuate them to the rear. Third S, silence. Silence is essential. Do not allow the prisoners to talk to each other. This prevents them from planning an escape and from cautioning each other on security. Report anything a prisoner says to you or attempts to say to another prisoner. Fourth S, speed. Speed prisoners to the rear. The information they have does no good until it's obtained by an interrogator and processed. I don't know about that. That can be altered a little. Fifth S, safeguard. The prisoners, as you take them to the rear, make sure they arrive safely. Do not allow anyone to abuse them. Do not allow anyone to give them cigarettes or food or water. Well, I don't plan on giving them cigarettes, food, or water. Definitely. Maybe we should put the fear of God in them. Let me recite the code of conduct here. I'm going to alter it a little bit. I think it's something that would be good for us. Number one, I am a white Aryan ghost wolf. I serve in the forces of the insurgency of my country and the white way of life. I am prepared to give my life in their defense. Number two, I will never surrender my own free will. If in command, I will never surrender my men while I still have the means to resist. Three, if I am captured, I will continue to resist by all means available. Just like David Lane and Frank Silva, they resisted even though they were locked up. They never gave up. They never gave in. They never sold out. I will make every effort to escape and aid others to escape. I will accept neither parole nor special favors from the enemy. Zog. Four, if I become a prisoner of war, I will keep faith with my fellow ghost wolf prisoners. I will give no information or take part in any action which may be harmful to my comrades. Tom Martinez, it's an insult that you still have breath in your lungs. If I am senior, I will take command, and if not, I will obey the law orders of those appointed over me and will back them up in every way. Sounds like number four is void of ego, the very thing that's destroying our movement. When questioned, should I become a prisoner of war, I am bound to give only the five words. I will evade answering further questions to the utmost of my ability. I will make no oral or written statements disloyal to my Ghost Wolf insurgency and its allies in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and harmful to their cause. I will not be harmful to their cause. Number six, I will never forget that I am a Ghost Wolf insurgent, responsible for my actions and dedicated to the principles which my insurgency stands for, the salvation of the white race. I will trust in the spirit of my ancestors and the white Aryan struggle. Very cool. I love taking stuff from the system and turning it back on them, you know? All right, I got quite a bit to read here about patrolling. Okay. When you talk about the primary routes and stuff, re-enter at a new point by returning over a route which is entirely different from the route to the objective. You know, you want to take a different route to there and then a different route coming back, because you don't want to be ambushed if someone's seen you. And that applies in nigger neighborhoods and everything. But have them mapped out, okay? Generally, this is the best method, especially in counter-guerrilla operations. The danger of ambush is reduced. Fucking interesting. Okay, re-enter at the point of departure by returning over the reverse of the route to the objective, whatever that means. Generally, this is the least desirable method, especially in counter-guerrilla operations. In counter-guerrilla operations, a patrol must always assume that its departure was observed and that its movement to the objective was detected. You know, I always assume that I may be watched, you know. But darkness is my friend. Okay, avoidance of setting patterns. Patrols must avoid, to the extent possible, in the circumstance they face, habitually employing the same method. Okay? You know, we'll talk about safe houses later. I got some good stuff on that. I got a show coming up on safe houses that'll make the NSA proud. But, you know, I mean, you want to vary your times coming and going. I mean, even, you know, like if you got to recon something, you know, maybe you want to take that route just to recon it. You're not doing the op, just to recon it. Maybe you want to go there at a different time, maybe alter your route a little bit. Never set a pattern. Okay. Cross-loading. The technique of distributing personnel, crews, and weapons, communications, special equipment. This is done to reduce the possibility of loss of destruction of a vehicle, which prevent the accomplishment of the mission. Okay, let's say we had to load up in some cars. You're not going to put all your communication personnel in one car and put all your cruiser weapons in one. What if that car gets destroyed and there goes all your cruiser weapons? You want to mix it up. You know what I'm saying? You want to put maybe a cruiser weapon in this car. If you got three cars, put a cruiser weapon in each car. Put a combo man in each car. Mix it up so if one gets hit, it doesn't take out the whole thing of what you need, whether it be combo, first aid, whatever. To confirm the location of the objective, plan for positioning of teams and plans for accomplishing the mission. Recon personnel move no closer to the objective than is necessary to accomplish the task. You don't want to get overdo it, get too close to the enemy, because, I mean, it's almost impossible to be completely silent, especially at night. What you want to do your best to avoid making any sounds. Rallying point, a place where the patrol can assemble and reorganize. Tactic or target of opportunity, a chance target. A target is not specifically planned until the target is detected. Something that comes up. All right, immediate action drills. Drills designed to provide swift and positive small unit reaction to enemy contact. Okay, ambush. Surprise attack from a concealed position on a moving or temporarily halted target. Surprise attack on a position or installation. You know what, there's a number of, and you guys need to work this out. If you guys get to a point where you have a cell, you want to have immediate action drills for a number of scenarios. Like, let's say you walk into an ambush. You don't want to wait for your leader to give an order. All right, you know, action left, you know, assault through the ambush element. You know, if you're in the kill zone of an ambush, your only chance of success, which is pretty small, is to assault through the ambush element. That means assault into the people who are shooting you, firing wildly, screaming, doing whatever you can to mentally discombobulate them or intimidate them, and maybe they'll miss, maybe they'll close their eyes when they're shooting. That happens, you know. Okay. Consistent with these requirements, he rotates duty as patrol leader among available NCOs and officers and avoids excessive use of selected men. You know, you want to rotate the duties of the guys, you know. If you're a machine gunner, everyone in your cell should be proficient at every single thing. If we get to a point we come under Chinese occupation, you know, UN occupation, we should definitely not stand for that. If you have five guys in your cell, every single one of them needs to be proficient in demolition. Every single one of them needs to be proficient in expedient incendiary devices. Every single one of them needs to be proficient in crew-served weapons like machine guns, you know, field stripping them. Some you should be practicing right now. If you guys have firearms, I mean, I don't because I just can't afford them. I mean, I'm so broke I can't pay attention. But you guys need to be able to field strip them and put them back together blindfolded. You guys should be practicing that. You never know whether you have to troubleshoot your firearm during the hours of limited visibility, okay? So that's something that everyone should know everyone else's job, okay? Okay. This sounds like the same thing I read before, but it says a point of re-entry if you're re-entering friendly lines. Re-entry at a point of departure may be directed, or to reduce danger of ambush, re-entry at a different point may be specified. I think I read that. Simple prearranged codes and code words are used to reduce transmission time and decrease the possibility of compromising the mission. Okay? That's dealing with communications, I guess. Prearranged code words or pyrotechnics may be used to indicate departure of friendly lines, arrival at checkpoints, accomplishment of the mission, or other desired information. You know what? We're not going to have a lot of support when we go out there and do things, okay? You know, just basically talking about don't set a pattern. And if you need pyrotechnics to do things, like let's say if you do an ambush, okay, a point ambush. You have your assault element, the ambush is triggered, you're shooting up the guys, the support element is shooting into the kill zone, and you want to let the support element know that your assault element is about to assault through the kill zone. You don't want your support element shooting up your own guys, so you want them to lift and shift fire to whatever, you know, whatever the left of the kill zone or right of the kill zone. Okay? And plus, if your support element does that, you'll be shooting fleeing enemy personnel that are trying to leave the kill zone. But you don't want to shoot up your own guys, so let's say you use a white star cluster for your support element to lift and shift fire off the kill zone because your assault element wants to go through the kill zone, maybe get POWs, maybe get maps, maybe get equipment, do whatever. Maybe just make sure everyone's dead. Who knows? You don't want to always use a white star cluster because if that becomes a habit, then the enemy will know that in the area, and if one of them starts to get ambushed, they'll immediately pop a white star cluster, and your support element, which is supposed to be killing everyone in kill zone, now started to lift and shift fire. Well, you can compromise the ambush that way, or null a lot of its defects, or effects. Sorry about that. But, you know. All right. Debriefing. Whenever the technique used, all patrol members are given the opportunity to add to information reported. Okay, if you do an operation and you're coming back, when you get back to the ORP, your objective rally point, which is right before where you did your ambush, your raid, your recon, whatever, you want the leader wants to disseminate the information, enemy information, right away, real quick to everyone there, or maybe they'll get out of the ORP and move maybe another 400 to 500 meters away, establish a rally point, then disseminate information, because just in case your patrol gets under comes under attack, at least you got one or two guys that can make it back with information. Okay, you don't want to wait. You don't want your ghost wolf cell to wait till it gets back to the rear for your one guy to disseminate information. That guy should find a place that has cover and concealment real quick for a couple minutes, disseminate the information. Okay, and the way you do something like that, everybody comes in to a real close circle but facing out. And a patrol leader will be in the middle of it, and basically he's in a whisper saying, all right, this is what this was, that's what that was. So that's, therefore, if their patrol comes under attack, you know, at least one or two guys or whoever doesn't make, everyone has the info, and they can give it to whoever needs that info. All right, use of SOP, standard operating procedures. Each ghost wolf cell can develop their own, okay? Can be very effectively used at all levels to simplify patrolling operations, especially planning by the patrol leader and preparations by patrol members. Following are a few items which may be appropriately established by SOP. All right, like a patrol uniform, your equipment, camouflage your weapons to include tape and sling so they don't make noise. You know, real quick here, you know, you have a ghost wolf cell. You say, when you guys are putting out an order, you say, all right, clothing according to SOP. Well, you already know your Ghost Wolf unit SOP, your standing operating procedure, is that everybody's to wear dark earth tone colors, no jewelry, no dog tags, no necklaces, okay? If members wear glasses, they have to have contact lenses in, but it may not be bad to have their glasses in a case, in a hard case. I'm always fearful of maybe losing that during your egress or anything like that, but you know, and they need to wear black rubber-soled shoes that are the most quietest shoes that they could buy, but still got some decent tread. Like, that is an SOP, meaning it when your Ghost Wolf cell leader is putting out the operation for the night, he doesn't have to go over what your uniform is. You say, all right, uniform according to SOP. That's it. Everyone knows what that is. It's not something he has to go over. It saves on talking time, you know, because I'm telling you, from personal experience, putting out an operations order can be draining on the mental faculties, so you want to make it as easy as possible. Okay, patrol leader, he studies situation and terrain concurrently with study of the mission. He coordinates continuously whenever and wherever he can. He supervises all at all times, personally and through his subordinates. He recons as early as possible and comes and combines this with other actions. You know what, if you guys ever develop a cell out there, and your Ghost Wolf cell leader designates subordinate leaders, and the Ghost Wolf cell comes up to subordinate leader, hey, did you make sure that you guys have all this type of equipment? That subordinate leader says, hey man, get off my back, I know what the fuck I'm doing. Listen, the Ghost Wolf cell leader's job is to constantly, it's his job to micromanage. He created subordinate leaders to take some of the burden off of him, but if he wants to investigate or check this out, don't get a case of the ass about it. You just fucking suck it up and drive on. That's being a good leader, to constantly check to see if this is upgraded, if that's upgraded, if everybody's got this specific type of equipment, okay? I'm telling you, ego is a killer. As soon as the patrol leader completes study of the mission, he quickly makes a mental and written time schedule, which allots time for each action. I don't know about that written, man. I try my best not to write anything down. If there's a lot of things that I need to write down, then what I'll do, I'll write them down, memorize it, and I'll burn that piece of paper. All right, going on, it says, he plans the time schedule around times, if any, specified in the operation order, such as time of departure, time to make reconnaissance, time of return. He uses a planning sequence called reverse planning. I've used this before. It does make sense. Meaning that he starts with the last action for which a time is specified and works back to receipt of the operation order. This helps ensure that time is allowed for all necessary actions. In planning use of time, the patrol leader ensures that subordinate leaders and patrol members are allowed time necessary to prepare for the mission. All right, study of terrain and situation. I keep talking about that a lot, right? Studying the terrain. I really want to beat that into your guys' heads. All right, terrain. It's a detailed study of the map and aerial photos, if available. He notes fields of fire and observation, cover and concealment, obstacles, key terrain, and avenues of approach. What's that called? A COCA. And avenues of approach and avenues of withdrawal. He studies the objective area very closely. He considers the influence of terrain on execution of the mission. Terrain may influence the patrol size, organization, and equipment. For example, a stream or lake to be crossed may require boots and extra men for probe crews. And you have to consider that in your time frame. Patrol formations while moving depend on the terrain, that is. For difficult terrain, close formation. For open terrain, they spread out more. Terrain may affect speed of movement. Terrain in the objective area helps determine security needed, positioning of fire support, manner of conducting the leader's reconnaissance, and a plan of action at the objective. Terrain dictates all of that. Situation. He studies the strengths, location, and disposition and capabilities of both friendly and enemy forces that may affect the patrol's operation. Makes a tentative plan. From the study of the mission, terrain, and situation, a patrol leader formulates a tentative plan of action for accomplishing the mission. All right, here's something here. Men whose physical condition may interfere with the mission are not taken. For example, a man with a cold may endanger security by coughing. A man with foot trouble may slow down the patrol. Okay? What is needed to do the job? Talking about weapons here. The difficulty of transporting some weapons because of bulk and weight must be considered, but is seldom a decisive factor. You know what? As Ghost Wolves, I recommend you travel light, as light as you can, but bring whatever you need for the op. And look at these Iraqi insurgents when they were, you know, doing what they were doing. You know, you're wearing sandals and maybe jeans and a t-shirt, you know, they have a rocket launcher. I mean, you know, you don't want to be loaded down with like the average American soldier, you know. Alright, gloves are included, even in warm weather, to protect hands from thorns, rocks, and barbed wire. I totally concur. A unit SOP, standard operating procedure, prescribing routine uniform and equipment saves the patrol leader and the patrol valuable time in planning and preparing. I think I just talked about that. Water and food. Each man carries a canteen of water. I don't know about that. I mean, you guys aren't going on missions that are going to last a fucking 3-4 days. You know, water, you drink a half bottle of water, all of a sudden you're walking and that half a bottle of water sloshing around, you know, it could make some noise. I don't agree with that. I recommend totally hydrating before an op, but not so much where you're pissing every 5 minutes either. On long patrols, especially in arid areas, each man may carry two or more canteens. Rations may be carried on, and that's, man, why did I fucking... All right, the missing of a single meal or its late consumption is not a hardship and does not reduce battle effectiveness. For long patrols, we don't got to worry about it. All right, a rule of thumb I told you before, I do my op at least 4 hours after the last time I ate. And I don't want to make sure it's not a big meal that makes me feel bloated either, because I may need more than 4 hours to digest it, you know. So, the patrol leader provides patrol members the maximum preparation time for time possible by issuing a warning order as soon as the tentative plan is made. Okay, a warning order. This is before you get the main order. This is when a Ghost Wolf cell leader comes up with a mission. Walking around one night scouting out some things, and he saw something that would be a good mission. All right, he talks to his guys on a Monday night, face to face, not over the phone. He says, all right, I just want to give you guys a quick warning, man. We're going to do something on Saturday night. And the quick warning order would be the situation. Minimum details are given to include only the information patrol needs to prepare while the patrol leader plans in detail. The complete situation is given in the patrol order. Okay, so you don't got to give a bunch of details. Just get the guy ready so they know to get their equipment ready. So that warning order should be situation, the mission. This is a brief but clear statement on what the patrol is to accomplish and the location of the area in which it's to be done. Okay. You can say situation. There's an apartment complex with a bunch of sexual predators who have been abusing white women, and because the police are so busy with Mexican gangbangers, we got to take care of it. Okay, so you already know it's going to be. The situation is, you already know what the mission is. It's an apartment complex. You know, you got to do what you got to do. Right, do your thing. Prohibited areas are also stated, such as wallets, prohibited items. Come on, man. The fuck? I got dyslexia or something? Prohibited items are also stated, such as wallets, letters, personal papers, which might reveal information if lost or captured. You guys know better than that. Absolutely don't bring a wallet with you on your Ghost Wolf op. Okay? If you have to... Fuck, see? I want to say if you have to bring something, bring your driver's license. But you know what? If you're dressed a certain way and you're doing something, I wouldn't want to stick around and talk to the cops. You know, by some chance, some small chance, you know, you was run into a police officer, I wouldn't stick around trying to try and talk to them, because I mean, they're just trained to be just very disagreeable, suspicious people. Okay, so I'm gonna leave it up to your call whether you bring your license or not and tuck it away in a pocket where it won't slip out. I'm gonna leave that up to you. Me personally, I never brought it. Because I never planned on making contact with anyone, you know, so. All right, time, place, uniform, and equipment for receiving the patrol order. When inspections and rehearsals are to be conducted immediately after the order, members are required to wear the uniform prescribed for the patrol and to bring all patrol equipment. This is a good way for the leader to check out and see, well, you know, maybe we can't bring that piece of equipment because it's too bulky, it makes too much noise, you know. All right, specific instructions. The specific instructions are given to the subordinate leaders for obtaining, checking, distributing weapons, ammunition, preparation of patrol members for the mission, initiating and supervising other activities to be accomplished, reconnaissance, coordination, and inspection and rehearsals. This is for the subordinate leader, not the actual leader. He's off busy finalizing his plan. The special purpose teams and key individuals for their preparation, such as preparation of demos, checks of radios, and map study for point and compass man, okay? Safeguarding of information. In some situations, special precaution must be taken to prevent compromise of the patrol or other operations through leakage of information normally given in the warning or patrol orders. Such a situation may occur in counter-guerrilla operations involving close association with native forces for use of native forces in patrols. Well, why the fuck did I highlight that? That would have nowhere near in our realm. I mean, we won't be doing that. Informers are often present at these circumstances. When this possibility exists, all information is given on a strict need-to-know basis. Other security members include isolation of the patrol after information is given and the withholding of information until the last feasible time. You know, I've said that before. You know, give you guys a call, right? And tell them that, you know, we're going to meet here, we're going to have some beers, whatever, and all of a sudden when all you guys get there, then you spring the mission on them if they don't need a bunch of equipment, you know? So, I hope you guys find this stuff interesting. I hope you guys are training in all aspects, because we truly live in a sick society, you know. Read something here from Ned Beaumont. He says, "Thereby we slacken to taught eternal vigilance, that is the price of liberty." Read 1984 if you want to learn what the abuse of names, words, and languages leads to. Better yet, read Thucydides' account of the revolution in Corcyra or something like that. Chicago public school system. He already knew in the 5th century BC that slippery words lead to tyranny and blood. The greatest historian who ever lived knew 2,400 years ago that the mutilation of the language leads to murder and the growth of a state oppression. Very well said. So that's I totally concur with that, because that totally describes contemporary modern America. You know, the Ghost Wolf concept is looking for a few good men. And we are not, when I say we, I'm just speaking not as a voice of authority or someone who knows it all, but just a voice on resist.com. You guys are voices. You guys called in on the update line and left stuff, you know, left messages, left advice, information. But we're looking for a few good men. And we're not going to limit that selection of men to nationality, to location. We truly need men to step up. You know, because we have some good opportunities here. You know, I mean, there's an economic crisis. A lot of municipalities don't have enough money to hire out more police. I'm not saying we're going to do anything that's going to break the law. Right? But on the other side of my mouth, I say Ghost Wolf Radio is a call to arms, absolutely. Listen, I'm not, you know, they can't do nothing to me because I'm not yelling fire in a crowded theater, okay? I'm not breaking any First Amendment laws. I have a First Amendment right. I'll use the word right when I'm dealing with them, but in all actuality, we know they're just privileges. We know that once they get sick of our shit, they're just going to come in like stormtroopers and just blast us, maybe to say we reached for a gun and we really didn't. They won't find a gun here. They'll find a fucking knife, a couple knives, maybe even a sword. But we are in some serious need here, and I hope you guys, I don't know what's going on out there, and maybe that's good, but I hope that you recognize that we live in a sick society, and that, you know, it can't be reformed at all. You know, you take out a house, you take a dilapidated house, you take out the drywall, and you think, well, everything's good, just put new drywall in, now we're good to go. That's not going to cut it. Replace the drywall is not going to cut it. The house is still infested with vermin. Okay. So we can put this amendment, maybe the Constitution come up with an amendment that'll look out for the interests of white people. You know what? It's too late for that. Okay? Because they're already saying by 2025, 75% of our children in this country will be non-white. So they can come up with an amendment that'll defend us. It will do us absolutely no good. It's just mental masturbation. And you know, right-wingers will fall for shit like that, thinking that they accomplished something. Right wingers, man, you know what? I never thought I'd live to see the day where I would actually wish nothing but violence on the right wing. You know? Guys that don't want to be open racist, but at the same time, you know, Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, these guys, I'm telling you, I want them to have a fiery end. I really do. Because they have done absolutely nothing to enhance 14 words. And not that 14 words, David Lane's 14 words, didn't mean anything to them, but just the concept of preparing a future for white children. They don't give a damn about that. You know, for Pat Buchanan and Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck, they just want to look out for that upper middle class, you know. The people who own companies, you know, they don't want to pay taxes, you know. They don't want regulation on banks, you know. They don't want this and that. And we've been duped into thinking that libertarians and other